flash to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, what's going on? Let's get things going. Happy Monday. It is October 21st, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you in our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patrick. How are we doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We've got a busy hour ahead. We're checking in with the head coach of the American Hockey League's Calgary Wranglers, Trent Cull, coming up here in the next little bit as the Wranglers, an absolute wagon to start the year at 4-1-0 and a four-game win streak for them. So we'll check in with Trent Cull a little bit later on as well, the Daily Flames Roundtable this hour. But make it 4-0-1 to start the season for the Calgary Flames. A 2-1 overtime loss Saturday spoils that bid for a franchise record five-game win streak to start a season, but 4-0-1, not going to be sneezing at that. And I do, it's funny because last week, Vix, we got into that conversation after they started 4-for-4 about the playoffs and what yeah. that might look like. And I find it very funny, the numbers. So the ones that I buy into, the NHL put these numbers out, kind of the playoff, the historical playoff percentages since the cap era began in 2005-2006 when teams start a certain way. So we told you the numbers. It was, 71.4% when you started 4-for-4 out of the gates in the history since 05-06, 71.4% of teams made the playoffs. Well, to go 10 out of a possible 10 points has been even higher. 25 teams in the cap era have started 5-0 and 24 of them have made the playoffs. So you're thinking, oh, geez. Okay. Well, 4-0-1 still got to be pretty high. I found this quite amusing. So from 96% success rate, if you went 5-0 to just 57.9%, if you go 4-0-1, just 11 of 19 teams who have gone 4-0-1 out of the gates have made the playoffs, which, you know what that means to me? It means that stats like that are very fickle because you're telling me that the difference between 5-0 and 4-0-1 going forward. Well, I mean, your percentage drops almost 40% if you don't get that one extra point.
Yeah.
So it does give you a little bit of an idea that those historical numbers, while interesting, are definitely not 100% predictors of the future. Hey.
No, that I'm glad you dug up those numbers because I didn't have them handy. But what a dramatic drop that 1 point does make. And like the success rate, as you mentioned, 24-for-25 make the playoffs going 5-0-0. Just 11 of 19 at 4-0-1. Like, we're talking 1 point here.
Yeah.
Over the course of five games, like that one single blemish, that 1 point blemish decreases you, as you mentioned, almost 40%. What is it? 39.1 or something along those lines. Don't ask me to do subtraction on the fly, but I'll do my best. That is such a dramatic swing, but to your point, maybe that means we just take these stats with a little grain of salt, because a swing that dramatic over the course of an 82 game schedule, one point really drops you that much. Crazy.
Yeah. And I don't think it does. And honestly, I had the conversation that we had last week about the postseason and about what a 4-0 start and now a 4-0-1 start could mean. I still think it's valid because you do at some point, and every team, not every team, but every year rather, a team or two gets out to a really good start and they put themselves in a situation where they're protecting. I remember a number of years ago, Minnesota did it, and Minnesota missed the playoffs that year. And a couple of years ago, remember it was Winnipeg who got off to that great start, and they almost missed the playoffs. They left the door open for the Flames until the 81st game of the season, and the Predators until the 81st game of the season. So every year there's a team that gets off to a really good start, and or a surprising start, or one that puts them in a situation where they're protecting for most of the year. Now, I don't think that we're quite at that point when it comes to the Flames. in terms of the start they've gotten themselves off to. But I think that we're starting to approach potentially being there if they can continue stringing some good results together, which leads us to Saturday, which I thought was, again, it was a different game. They've played five games. They've been very different the entire way through. And that one was just a night where Seattle plays a very certain brand of hockey. They make it very difficult on the opposition. The Flames want to play very similar. I kind of, when I was really big into UFC, when they were making matches and you'd come away from a match saying, geez, why was that match no good? A lot of times what you'd hear from the experts was styles make fights, right? And sometimes two guys in the way that they fight just doesn't make for a very entertaining match. Well, I kind of felt that was the way things went on Saturday night.
Tell me how you really feel.
It was sloppy on both sides. It was
disjointed is the word that I kind of came
it's a good way of, but you know why I think it was so disjointed? Because the way the Flames want to play it and the way Seattle wants to play it, when they're having success, they make the other team look disjointed. Yep. So if both teams are playing it as close to the vest as those two teams like to do, you might get a disjointed-looking game on either side, which I kind of feel like we did.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of flow in that game. There was a lot of, for lack of a better term, disruption on both sides where we didn't see that fantastical, cliched hockey night in Canada entertainment value sort of game. It was to use your kind of UFC comparable, it was two fighters in the middle of the octagon that are trying to play their particular brand of fight, play your brand of fight, however you want to rephrase that to make it make more sense. And in doing so, there wasn't a lot of ability for the other side to counterpunch or try to put their own stamp or their slant on the game. And it led to maybe not the most entertaining game, but if you're the Calgary Flames and you're going in there and you're being able to execute the way that they sort of did, like, I didn't hate it from a road game perspective, where you're going into somebody else's arena and you're really doing a good job of limiting their shots, you're blocking shots, you're, again, disrupting the flow a little bit. It just so happened that that's what Seattle was doing at home as well, which made it kind of a bit of a squirrely game.
They both played a good road game.
Yes.
Yeah, it was two teams playing a good road game on Saturday. But you know what? They still got the point. They're 4-0-1. That's a five-game point streak to start the year. Remember 2 years ago, they got off to a 5-1-0 start, which was the best six-game start in franchise history. Well, now they have the opportunity to beat that. And if they can go 5-0-1 with a win Tuesday over Pittsburgh, that'll be the new best six-game start in franchise history. I will say I did not think Saturday's game was devoid of positives because, once again, they didn't give up a whole lot. And that's turning into a little bit of a theme when it comes to this group right now. At 5-on-5, Flames allowed just four high-danger scoring chances on Saturday in Seattle. And that is three straight games where they've been able to keep those 5-on-5 high dangers to single digits. Just 16 high-danger chances allowed in the last three games for the Flames. So, you know, even though each night hasn't been perfect, they've done a nice job against Edmonton, against Seattle, and against Chicago of not allowing a whole lot and not giving the opposition much. And I think that's going to be a big part of their identity this year, especially if they end up being a successful group like they're hoping. That I think is going to be a big part of what they want to do and a big part of their identity.
Well, you ran through the scoring chances. They only surrendered 10 shots on goal through the first 40 minutes of that game, and that includes a run of penalties, the Kadri double minor for high sticking. Kevin Ball had a tripping minor and Jonathan Huberto had a slashing minor. So when you consider 10 shots through 40 minutes of action with that sort of penalty trouble in the middle frame, and then when there was a shot, Dan Vladar was absolutely outstanding. And I know we'll get to him eventually. But there were a lot of things that you can take from that game, even though you lost 2-1. Even though it ended a four-game winning streak, it still gave you a five-game point streak. And if I'm the coaching staff, I don't know how upset I am with that loss, just given the brand of hockey you were able to play in a road setting. And I think that's one of the key elements to take away from is when you're going on the road, you're able to disrupt and frustrate the other team the way the Calgary Flames did. Don't get me wrong, the Flames were probably a little disrupted and frustrated as well. But you're able to go into somebody else's arena and sort of play your style of game. And when you limit them to 10 shots through two periods, that's a heck of a road start.
Really, really solid night for Dan Vladar. You mentioned it. I thought he looked again like the type of goaltender that's going to give you an opportunity to win. And he looked like he was in it, and he looked like he was pretty focused and confident right from the get-go. This goaltending story has turned into a real positive one for him. I mean, even if we're going to talk to Trent Cullen in just a few minutes, you take a look at what Ignatieff and Devin Cooley are doing in the American League, what Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar are doing at the NHL level. Like, goaltending has been a real positive for the group, and another really solid night for Dan on Saturday in Seattle. And I just, especially for Vladar, for both guys at the NHL level for different reasons, each positive outing, each kind of quality start you can string together, I think just builds on things. And for Vladar coming off of the hip surgery, the ability to string quality starts together, I think is a real important thing to see. And I thought that was another quality start for him on Saturday.
Oh, absolutely. And there wasn't a great workload through the 40 minutes, as I mentioned, but when something broke down, Dan Vladar was there to bail the guys out in front of him. And when you're able as a goalie to sort of instill that confidence in the group that should something go wrong, the last line of defense will hold up, Dan Vladar has done just that. Once you get past the first period in Vancouver, he's been absolutely, and I'm not even hanging the first period in Vancouver on Dan Vladar, because that was a lot of the Calgary Flames losing a lot of composure trying to track down JT Miller and taking a lot of bad penalties. But once you get past that opening 20 minutes of the season, Dan Vladar has been absolutely lights out, and he's given the group in front of him reason to be confident that, again, that last line of defense will hold should there be a structural breakdown or a bad turnover.
So I just went and did the quick math, and I think I did it correctly. But since the first period against the Canucks, Dan Vladar has made 54 stops on 58 shots. He allowed 4 on 15 in the first period in Vancouver. Since that time, 54 on 58, which is good for a .931 save percentage. So I know that you take a look at the two save percentages and say, geez, Wolf's at .944 and Vladar's at .890. Well, first of all, we're five games in, so I throw pretty much every goaltending statistic out the window until we're about 10, 15 games into a season. But that makes it a little bit more, that gives you a little bit more of an idea as to what they've actually brought to the table. Wolf at .944 in his two wins, and Vladar .931 in 8 of the 9 periods that he's played, plus a couple overtimes. So I just think that that is an important underline to talk about just how positive this goaltending story has been so far this season.
Honestly, it wouldn't have shocked me before training camp. The question was, what's this goaltending tandem going to look like? Who's it going to be? How are they going to perform? And I could absolutely see a scenario where the Calgary Flames goaltending duo was going to be under siege a lot. And one, credit to the structural defense of the team. I don't think that that's necessarily been as dramatic as maybe I was anticipating. But then to layer another element onto it is how strong the two goalies, Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar, have actually played in when there is a high danger chance or when there is a breakdown, when you need a save. The goaltenders, whether it's Wolf, whether it's Vladar, have been there to give the Calgary Flames a chance. Like, 4-0-1 start. Goaltenders have given you a chance to win in every single game. And even going back to Vancouver, sure, he had the really bad first period. Again, I'm not hanging it all on Dan Vladar, but he was lights out from this. He was lights out from puck drop on the second period onward to give the Calgary Flames a chance to work themselves back into that game.
Yep.
So you have to tip your cap to Vladar and Wolf. Like, it was a big, big question mark. And a lot of people, me, myself included, wondered how they would hold up. They have held up really well.
Yep. Through five games, it's been maybe the biggest positive for the team so far. I just wanted to, and I just wanted to say one more thing. I know the overtime winner ends up coming off a mistake from Nazem Kadri. Understood. Absolutely. I just thought Saturday's postgame show, the Flames Talk postgame, was maybe a little too vitriolic towards number 91 based on one offish night and one mistake. Yes, he misread a situation. He tried to break out 3-on-3, and the support wasn't there, and maybe he read the situation wrong. He got easily picked off by Montour. Vladar makes the first stop because it was such a disjointed situation. Montour gets the puck back, gives it to Eberle, and it's game over. But, you know, I still, like, to be all of a sudden saying that Nazem Kadri doesn't want to be here and that was the example, or and honestly, saw those texts, or he's always a liability. I just thought that was a little silly and a little over the top. So I wanted to play this clip because I thought Nazem explained it really well when he spoke on Monday morning after practice.
You know, that's what happens. You know, sometimes you need some courage to make some plays. Obviously, didn't end the way I wanted it to. I'm just as upset as anyone, obviously, but you know, probably could have had 2 or 3 in that game. Also, had it bounced a little bit differently. But like I said, we fought hard, and we got the point. We'll take that.
It's like easy. Guys make mistakes, and I always love Nazem's even keel and his ability to be like, yeah, it's not what I wanted to do, but like, just pump the brakes. Like, these things happen. Yes, there was a slight mistake in overtime, but like, this guy has been their best player since the beginning of last year. I think we can ease off some of the over-the-top silliness texts that we got on Saturday night because of one miscue. Like, let's pump, to steal Nazem's words from day one of training camp, let's pump the brakes, friends.
Playmakers are going to try and make plays, and was he perhaps a little more careless than he should have been on 3-on-3 overtime? Yeah, but if he makes that one move, suddenly the Flames have an odd man rush going the other way. You want to talk about, oh, Naz doesn't want to be here. Naz, he had 6 shots. He had 9 attempts. He was 67% in the draw. Like, what about his game other than perhaps one ill-timed turnover? Didn't you like about that game?
I just thought the text that came in on Saturday were a little silly. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. Flames are back in action Tuesday night when they welcome the Pittsburgh Penguins to kick off a 3-game homestand. It is a Monday, which means an opportunity to catch up with our next guest as well. It's Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. So the Flames are 4-0-1 to start the season, and then the Calgary Wranglers, after dropping their home opener a little more than a week ago, have rattled off 4 straight. They are scoring in bushels. They're getting great contributions up and down the lineup, and you can make it 4-1-0 to start the season for Trent Culls' Calgary Wranglers, including a sweep of Henderson on the road over the weekend. Trent Cull, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, joins us on Flames Talk as he does every Monday. Mr. Cull, it's Pat and Aaron. How are we doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, and it's been a lot of fun to follow your group's start to the season. It's been a nice little 4-game run. I get we haven't spoken to you since the beginning of the season because last Monday was the holiday and a day off for your group, so we figured we'd let Trent have Thanksgiving. But how do you like the 5-game start for your group? Tell us about a 4-1-0 start for the Wranglers.
It's been good. I've liked how our team has been playing. I mean, we started a little bit slow, I would say, the first night for sure. You know, one thing is, you know, in the American League, right, we don't have preseason games, but mind you, Abbotsford doesn't either. But we had some guys that had to blow some rust off, and we started a little slow. I thought we finished decently in the first game, but not enough. And I thought the next night we came out and started playing a little bit better brand of hockey. And I feel like we've kind of been getting better and better with every appearance. You know, we've had some periods that are off or this or that, or a little bit of moments or some shifts, but and we're still making mistakes. That happens right now. But overall, working pretty hard in general, getting some good quality goaltending, getting some timely scoring. And, you know, I liked our defense for 2 periods in the last game we just played.
Man, to roll into those 2 buildings and take 3 wins, we know how difficult Coachella Valley can be to play in, and then 2 in Henderson, and you roll out of there with 3 games on your first road trip of the season. That must be a real nice building block for the group.
It is. You know what? It's always nice. I always say this too. Like, it's nice to get on the road at some point early in the season, just because it's a great time to get the everybody together, you know what, and we're, getting on the bus, or making some miles on the bus and getting on there and seeing each other and hanging out a little bit. And it's good. You know, anytime I know this team, especially even before my time, I spent a lot of time in Coachella, and it's a tough building to go into. So it's nice to steal one there. And then, you know, like it's not easy winning back to back in any league, you know? And so that to do that in Henderson, I was really pleased with our group. And it's been a, you know, almost everybody's been playing. Everybody's been, you know, got themselves in the lineup. So it's been a very, group attack for sure.
You, that last win over the weekend in Henderson, a 22 save shutout for Devin Cooley, which I was actually a little surprised to see, his first American League shutout. But boy, you take a look at his numbers on the outside and they are sparkling, Trent. And you talk to people with the org, you talk to people who have watched and just how good Devin Cooley's been through these first four games for him of the season. But what about from your standpoint? Tell us about Cooley and his first four games in Wranglers colors.
No, it's been really good. You know, like, I mean, I'll be honest, like I've looked up some stats and was looking up, you know, the guy's numbers last year. And I didn't feel like they were anything crazy, but, and why I'm saying that, I don't mean to be derogatory. That's not it, but it's, you know, we have some goalie guys who really know what they're doing, and they targeted this player. And, you know, I remember them talking about him last year, you know, I'm talking about Jordan and McKenzie, you know, and then when they target him and then all of a sudden they bring him in, and I think it was nice for Calgary, but got to see him, you know, a little bit in preseason. And then for us come down here, he's just been, I feel like, kind of settling in every game, and he's made some really big saves, but also he's made a lot of real solid, simple saves there as well too. And, he's been giving us a chance every night, that's for sure, in his games played.
And then you've also had the one start for Ignatiev in his one game, and pretty solid outing for him by all accounts. And, you know, I know you got to know him and get acquainted with him a little bit in Penticton at Young Stars, but just your overall observations of a guy who's still getting used to the North American game in Valtteri Ignatiev.
Yeah, you know what? He was dialed in that morning on game day morning, like even pregame skate. You know, as a coach, you kind of just like stare around, look at some things, and he was just, you could tell he was dialed in that morning, and I thought it really kind of translated into his game that night. You know, he was solid and he looked good, and even though there was a couple late goals, like didn't rattle him, stayed with it, made some big saves. Like he looks like. For me, it's like both guys, they're gamers, you know what I mean? Like, they're, in other words, the game, the puck drops, like they're ready to go and they're dialed in. And again, it's really nice when there's a breakdown and these things happen, as we know. And mind you, you got some really good goaltenders making saves, which is something that the Wranglers have been used to for a while here.
We're chatting with Trent Cull. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, 4-1 to start the season in the American League. He joins us Mondays here on Flames Talk to get the latest on the number one affiliate for the Calgary Flames. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on this Monday Flames Talk. Vicks?
Coach, you look atop the leaderboard and you find Rory Karens leading the AHL in goals with 7, points with 8. I know he was a member of your team last year, but I'm wondering what you're seeing from him now to start this season that's given him some early success.
You know what? I think there's just a really good, first talking about Rory, like he plays in straight lines. He's really good around another team's net. Like he's really, like he stays in there. He hangs in there. He gets dirty goals. He gets, nice goals because he can shoot the puck. He's got a great shot too, but he's not afraid to go to the paint. And I think that is just it's a great thing because sometimes, you know, there's a lot of, you know, let's watch a pretty goal on ESPN and a highlight reel thing. But you know what? Rory gets around the paint. And right now, too, he's playing with two pretty good players with Hunty and Peltier. And so, like, I think these guys have – there's always been a little chemistry, I think, with Peltz and Hunty whenever those two have been around each other. And then now with Rory doing a lot of the kind of the quiet, solid work down the middle of the ice and getting to the net, it's been very rewarding for the group.
I'm going to ask you about Jacob Peltier in a moment, but just on Karens, year over year, where have you seen him improve the most, or is it just a better understanding and a little bit more maturity of what the pro game is like in the AHL?
I think it would be the maturity, but I think it's also to the physical maturity of making sure like his body is in the best shape. Rory worked really hard this summer, and he came in with the best results that he'd ever had through his testing. And I think that's just translated right into on ice. You know, I think he understands what it is and takes to be a pro. And I thought he had a really good, showing and start of the year in the American League last year. kind of dwindled down the stretch a little bit. And now you can see he's come back. He's even in better shape and he's had a great start. And hopefully that's something that he can just keep on doing throughout the year.
And on Jacob Pelche again, you look at that scoreboard and he's got 8 assists in 5 games, leads the AHL in that category. He was pretty vocal and pretty open and honest in training camp about not wanting to go on waivers and if he was, not being claimed by a team because he wanted to stay in the Flames organization. From your perspective, how have you seen him sort of rebound from being assigned to the AHL and dealing with all this sort of turmoil, if you will, for a young player?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? He's just been a real professional. He's come down. You know what? I think he was maybe upset or pissed off or whatever you want to say, but I think he's put that right into his game. You know what? And I thought he's played that way. He's been tenacious. He's been feeling better about his play, I think, about his body. You know, he went through some injuries last year when I had him here as well. So I think he's been down here. He's been playing well, and I give him a ton of credit. Like, and I'm going to say this probably about a few guys, but, you know, sometimes some like one of the last cuts of things that are going on, but hasn't sulked, hasn't just brought a great professional attitude and shown that on the ice every day.
Organizationally, though, you want a player to be mad when he doesn't make the NHL team, right? As long as he channels that emotion the proper way.
Absolutely. And he has, you know, no different than, you know, Connor Zary was the same thing last year. He was ticked off. He was down. But, you know, and I'm going to say that right now about this year, you know, like I'm sure Walker Dewar wasn't excited to, you know, to come down after playing a year in the NHL or Huntsie after finishing last year in the NHL. But you know what? These guys are great pros, really good people. Come down. They're fiery. They have emotion and it's awesome. And right now those guys are driving our team.
Yeah, you mentioned Walker Dewar, 3 goals and 4 points on Saturday. He's the third of that trio with Cairns and Pelletier sitting atop the AHL scoring lead. What have you seen in his game, and how has he managed to transfer his skills? Because he's been very much a checking role in the NHL, but 8 points in 5 games will attest that there's a little bit of scoring punch there too.
I feel like I'm segueing this stuff for you almost.
You're doing great, Coach. It's fantastic.
You've got a job on this show anytime you want it.
Anyway, it's a funny story. It's easy. Like you said, you look up the stats, but you know what, Walker? I had a very small serving size of Walker last year. He came down for 2 games, right? But for a guy who probably hasn't played much over the last year, and again, comes down real professional. I'm kind of getting to know Walker as we go here too, but like our first talk was like, I'm not putting you on the power play. I'm putting you on a line with Clark Bishop, and you guys, I want you to be first over the boards to be the penalty killer. And I said, I want you to work on faceoffs too, because we don't have many right shots, and, you know, work on your faceoff. So if Bish gets kicked out, that you can jump in there. But anyways, so that was right out the window after, you know, some transactions happened. This and that. He's on the power play too now too. But he's, you know what, first and foremost, he's checking really well. And him and Bish have been fantastic on the penalty kill for us. And, you know, Walker has found a home on the power play there as well. He's doing a great job at net front. And you know what, he's skating really well. I feel like he's confident with the puck. But he's not changing or trying to be a skilled player. He's playing in straight lines. He's checking in straight lines. And because of it, I just feel like the line has really kind of clicked for me, you know, watching Lucas Siona with him and Clark. And they've just been playing the game the right way. And it's nice to see Walker get rewarded for it.
We're chatting with Trent Cull, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. And last one we'll leave you with, just a bit of an odd schedule, hey? Like, you're on the road for 3, and then you got a little bit of time. Did the group come back between Henderson and Bakersfield, or are you still down south?
We're still down south.
Okay.
Because really, we finished Saturday night in Henderson, and then it was a night in Henderson, and then the next day we bussed yesterday here. Which is a 4.5 hour bus ride. So it's a bit of a stretch. And then, and so we just had practice today. And so we stayed here and then obviously playing tomorrow. So, but, you know, big shout out though to Brad Pascal, my boss, because last year, sometimes our schedule, there was a lot of miles being put on us. I don't know if you remember, we were talking about this, but back and forth and back and forth. And so we were trying to get some, when we go on the road, to try to fill in some more games, you know, and so then it takes away from our time of trips or air flights and et cetera. And when you're flying commercial, it's just like everybody else does. it kind of really adds up. So a couple extra days on the road, but then in a way it'll probably be less time on the road because we're not making as many trips and certainly hopefully not as much wear and tear on our group with less plane travel.
Yeah, I was even go take a look at your schedule. 4-game road trip, 8-game homestand, 7-game road trip. Like it is a situation where maybe it's a little less stunted and all over the place, which I would imagine is right. Just wear and tear on the players' bodies. That must go a long way in these guys not being exhausted midway through the season, hey?
I think so. I mean, and that's, you know, we ran into a lot of injury trouble there last year with our group and, you know, and call-ups, and that's how it goes, right? So it's just one of those things that, you know, always everyone's trying to improve, and I know Brad did a great job with that of just trying to kind of just, like, take care of the group a little bit more, right? And then there's going to be some days where we have, like yesterday, it was gorgeous driving around California and seeing new things and, you know, some different mountain ranges and whatever and some desert Joshua trees. And so anyways, a little bit of things to see. So it's all good.
Well, enjoy your rest of your time down south and good luck Tuesday as you try to wrap it up with a perfect road trip, Trent. Really appreciate the time as always. We'll see you back here when you're back home. We'll talk to you next week, but thanks so much for the time. We'll talk next Monday. Thanks, Trent.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me. Look forward to always talking.
Absolutely. He's Trent Call. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He joins us Mondays on Flames Talk, and they're on a roll. 4 straight wins after dropping the home opener, and the Wranglers 4-1-0 to start the year. Trent Call joins us Mondays on Flames Talk, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Monday edition of the program continues with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you, and now the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport. And we welcome in the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, now to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, happy Monday, and Flames are 4-0-1 to start the year. There's been a lot of positives. There's been a lot of intrigue. And one of the more intriguing players to start the year, because of where he was playing, is Martin Pospisil. Moving him to center, trying him at center for the first time in his NHL career, and he's been centering Anthony Mantha and Jonathan Huberdeau through the first 5 games of the year. Gents, through 5 games, granted a very small sample size, where are we on the Martin Pospisil at center experiment?
Well, I think he's had some good moments. Maybe the best was him driving the net in overtime against the Canucks in the season opener, and I think creating some space for Connor Zary to score one of the goals of the season so far in the NHL, that overtime winner and a 6-5 victory over the Canucks. But I'm not sure that he has been, at least for me, as impactful playing at center as he was in the wing. I mean, he was, in my opinion, one of the most impactful rookies in the NHL last season. I know if you just look at the stats, maybe it doesn't tell that story, although he did lead the league in rookie plus minus. But just the way he was able to quickly develop a reputation and play a style of hockey that got under the skin of his opponents, just thought he did so much to help the Flames win hockey games last season. And I haven't seen that same Martin Pospisil this season. I haven't seen a guy who is regularly getting in there on the forecheck and banging and crashing and really annoying his opponents. He's done that from time to time, but for me, not as consistently as he did as a rookie. Now, as a centerman, he's got some different responsibilities, and I think is probably thinking a little bit more than just playing out there right now, which I guess should be expected when you go from being a winger to being a centerman. But I would say he's been okay, but maybe not as impactful as he was as a winger, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I agree that the experiment down the middle, I'm not done with it. I'm not over it yet. I want to see more than 5 games of Martin Pospisil down the middle. But he hasn't been that same disturber. He hasn't been that same guy that's first on the forecheck and disrupting defensemen and having guys look over their shoulder all the time when he's over the boards and on the ice. it just hasn't been as exciting. And to your point, Wilsey, about him being one of the most impactful rookies last season, he was probably Calgary's most entertaining player last year. Just the combination of his physicality, his agitation, his ability to use his speed. He had some finish. I don't think we're necessarily seeing quite that same blend through five games this season. But as you mentioned, he's being asked to do certain things that he didn't have to last year. And that includes being more defensively responsible. And that impacts his ability to do some of the things that made him effective as a winger. Again, I'm not quite ready to just say this experiment needs to end and now they need to try it with Connor Zeri, for example. I still want to see more of Martin Pospisil as a center because I think he has the acumen for it. I think he has the speed for it. And I think that he can still find a way to get under the opponent's skin. We've seen that a couple of times, particularly with the Philadelphia Flyers and the Chicago Blackhawks. It hasn't quite worked 100% the way I've envisioned it or the way that I saw at the World Championship for Slovakia over the summer. But at the same time, I'm not done with the Martin Pospisil at center experiment.
Guys, it's interesting because I'm exactly where Vix is. Like, I'm definitely not done with it, and I wanna see more. Now the problem is that we're out of the preseason now, so as you're experimenting, the points also count, or the losses count, wins count, so on and so forth. But there were two games during this opening five game stretch of the season that I came away saying, damn, if we can see that on a semi-regular basis from Pospisil, then maybe this experiment's going to be a green check mark. And those two games were Philadelphia in the home opener and Edmonton the next night. Like that back-to-back stretch, Wilsey, I thought he looked dynamite, and that line looked really good, and I thought that Pospisil was one of the main reasons why that line looked so good. And Huberto was, you know, he was slinging it around, and his passes looked like he was back to vintage Huberto, and Anthony Mantha was making some really, really important plays and was shooting it, and he scored the big goal against Edmonton, which ended up being the game winner. And so I came away from those two games thinking to myself, man, if we can see more of this from Pospisil, then this could be a really, really positive experience. Now, the last two games have not been as impressive for that line, and I definitely haven't noticed Pospisil anywhere near as much. And to the extent that I really felt they struggled against Seattle on Saturday, you came away from that game feeling like, woof, that line had a rough night. And I thought Pospisil struggled in the faceoff dot on Saturday. I thought Huberto struggled with decision making. I thought Mantha was just a little bit too invisible. But for one night, I mean, that happens to any line over the course of a season. But it's those two games, Wilsey, those two games against Edmonton and Philadelphia that really opened my eyes and said, okay, that's what Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska have been talking about. That's why they have been adamant about wanting to try him down the middle. So I want to keep seeing more of it. And over the next number of weeks or months or whatever the case may be, how many more games like Edmonton or Philadelphia can the Flames get out of Pospisil? It's going to be really interesting to see.
Yeah, and I'm with you guys. I'm not done with it. Not that it would matter if I was done with it, but I'm not. I'm not at that point, certainly. And for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think that he has had some flashes. He has had some games where he's looked good playing up the middle. But there have also been games when I've wondered, you know, could he be maybe more of a difference maker playing on the wing and then playing that same style of hockey that Flames fans fell in love with last season? Yeah, I've wondered that from time to time as well. Listen, we have such a small sample size to work with. I think at this point we've kind of thrown the preseason out, and we have five regular season games to work with. And I would say that not only has that line not been as good, I would say the Flames as a whole haven't been as good in the last couple of games. And yeah, I know they got three of a possible 4 points, but you know, I would certainly single out their top nine. You know, their fourth line's been pretty consistent in the role they've played in the first five games of the season. I thought the top nine as a group certainly wasn't as impactful playing three games in four nights, which you should expect because they're playing the most minutes, and looked a little bit out of sync, I thought, in that game against the Kraken as well. both teams were trying to be responsible defensively and clogging up the neutral zone and making passes that should be simple look maybe way more difficult than they should be. But I thought both teams did a pretty good job making life tough on their opponents. So, you know, it's just a one game sample as well. But, you know, he's a guy who certainly can not take a game over, but take a shift over and have a huge impact on hockey games. We saw that as a rookie. We've seen that at times as a sophomore. And again, it's probably going to take him a little bit of time to really get comfortable playing a new position and playing with two new wingers and Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony Mantha. So small sample size, there's been some good. I wouldn't even say there's been bad, maybe just maybe some not so good. So yeah, let's let this thing play out. And the other thing too, guys, if there was an obvious guy who you could slip into that spot, then maybe it would be something that I would think twice about. But, you know, I like Connor Zary playing on the left side of a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. Yegor Sharangovich is hurt. So who else is there right now?
No, exactly. And at the end of the day, guys, we're still talking about a player that's got 5 points in five games. So it's not as if this experiment has been an absolute disaster. It's just when you start digging into some of the underlying analytics where a 45% Corsi 4 percentage and a 47.4 on ice expected goals percentage, you'd like to see those nudge up a little bit. But for a guy that's playing center in the NHL for his first five games ever, coming away with one goal and four assists and a +3 rating isn't bad at all.
Yeah. And I mean, I was thinking about the same thing, guys. Okay. Well, if not Pospisil down the middle, who? The obvious choice in my mind would be Zary, which I would like to see that at some point. But at the same time, I think the most consistent line this Flames team has had has been the Backlund line with Coleman and Zary through the first five games. And so because of that, do you want to break that up? And yeah, it all of a sudden it starts to complicate things. By the way, forward lines were exactly the same on Monday morning at practice, so it doesn't look like any changes coming in that regard. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you on this Monday Flames Talk. Guys, how have we felt about the power play, both in terms of what it's produced and how it's looked? What or how have we felt about the power play so far through the first five games of the season?
Well, it's hard to argue with the numbers. I mean, the Flames are tied for sixth in the NHL with a power play percentage of 29.4%. And again, small sample size, five games, but that is a huge increase from where they were last season. And I know that the first two-thirds, three-quarters of the season when Mark Savard was running the power play, they didn't have a lot of success. Quite frankly, they struggled way more often than not and didn't just struggle to score power play goals, struggled to get into the offensive zone and stay in the offensive zone and create chances and at least pick up some momentum with their power play. It felt like more often than not, the other team was gaining momentum with their penalty kill, but then they make a change as far as who was coaching it. And I thought Cale MacLean did a really good job down the stretch last season. That has carried over into this season. And that's despite the fact that the five-man unit that they thought they were going to end last season with and start this season with got broken up before the regular season started because they lost one of their trigger men in Yegor Sharangovich. But the first power play unit, for me, has been really effective in the first five games of the season. And that goes beyond just the power play percentage of 29.4%. It's about when they've scored power play goals. And I think, for me, the best example, not the only example, but the best example, has to be that game against the Blackhawks. So it was a bit of a dogfight. The Flames weren't at their best, and it's a 1-1 hockey game. The Flames get a power play and have an opportunity to score a big goal, and Andrei Kuzmenko gets one. And it turns out to be the game winner, the 2-1 goal in that 3-1 victory. And there were so many games last season, really over the last couple of seasons, where, you know, the hockey game was close. Maybe you're even, maybe you're ahead by a goal, maybe you're behind by a goal. And you just got the sense that if the Flames could score a power play goal, that it would be huge for them. And more often than not, they didn't. They just couldn't seem to score a big power play goal at an important time in a game. But this season, that hasn't been the case. So, you know, I think that Cale MacLean has done a great job with that unit. The first unit, minus Sharangovich, has still been really strong. The second unit's been a bit of a work in progress. We've seen four forwards and one defenseman at times. We've seen three forwards and two defensemen at times. We've seen a different guy kind of playing alongside of Rasmus Anderson on the blue line when they do go with 2D. So the first unit's been fantastic. The second unit, I think there's still some work to do there. But again, hard to argue with the results so far.
Yeah, you mentioned Willsey tied for sixth at a 29.4% rate. Last year, and we know it's been a dramatic improvement, 17.9%, 26th overall last year, and that includes a run of about 12 to 14 games where it was at a clip that was top five in the league, and that only propped them up to 26. So you've got to give Cale Maclean credit, like you said, for reorganizing this power play a little bit and getting it back on track. Generally speaking, it's hard to argue with the numbers. I will sort of mention as well that at times zone entries have looked a little disorganized, and that would be one element that I would look to clean up. But overall, it's hard to argue when you're scoring almost one out of every three power plays. And as you mentioned, Willsey, the timeliness of some of those goals have been absolutely critical for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, I mean, what we're talking about, four of the first five games, they have scored a power play goal on or in. And I do like what we've seen from them just in terms of the overall mentality. Like, there have been, I still think the first power play they had Tuesday of last week against Chicago might be one of the top five worst power plays I've ever seen. And literally, like, the next power play, the goal that you're talking about, Willsey, Kuzmenko scores it, and that ends up being the game winner. So it has not been perfect by any means. And if you're Cale Maclean, the coach who's in charge of it, yeah, I mean, you're probably looking at you know, really working on things, and you're all, obviously they did a ton of work Monday morning at practice on the power play. They spent like the last 25 minutes just going back and forth between the two units, and so I think that there's still some work needed, but I do like the overall simplicity that we're seeing on it. It's just been without the trigger man in Sharon Govich on the first power play unit, it's been a lot of just really simple plays, pucks towards the net, and they've been able to simplify it and have some success that way. The other one that I'd point to in terms of a timely goal, Willsey, would come in the season opener in the third period when Mackenzie Weegar just does that. And yes, it was against Seelovs, who has a very now large book on him for how difficult he makes things on longer distance shots. But that was just a Weegar shot on net that beat Seelovs on the power play, and a good example of how just keeping it simple can be really positive, especially early on in a power play. And then even on the second unit, what we saw from Blake Coleman on the 1-0 goal late in the first period on Saturday, exact same thing. Sees a little traffic, puts the puck towards the net, and bam, it's 1-0. So I like the simplicity of what we're seeing from the power play early on. I think that's been really important. I think it'll get much better in a couple of weeks when Sharon Govich is back. And, you know, he hasn't started skating with the team yet, and so we're still waiting. We're still a week or two away from Sharon Govich getting back into the lineup, we think. But, you know, that will make that'll definitely give them just a little bit of a step forward. Last thing I'll say about the power play, I'm curious as to how the number two unit evolves. We haven't yet seen a ton from Tyson Barrie in the two games he's played on the power play, but part of that is because he's only played two games, and it looks like he might be coming back out of the lineup for Tuesday's game against Pittsburgh, and Miramanov comes back in. But the kind of the flip-flopping, or the way that they adjust their second power play unit when Barry's in as opposed to Barrie being out, is going to be an interesting thing to watch going forward too.
Well, and the other thing in defense of Tyson Barrie is, because of who they have on the right side, they've been playing him on his offside. And he has admitted that he's not as comfortable playing on the left side as he is on the right side. And even on the power play, you know, he's been out there with Rasmus Anderson, another right shot. So I do think that that is far from ideal, but he's a guy who's had a lot of success on the power play in his career. And I suspect at some point in time, he's going to help the Flames second unit power play. And Aaron, you talked about zone entries. I do think they miss Yegor Sharangovich.
Yeah.
In two different ways on the power play. They obviously miss his shot. He's got a great shot, but he was really good at zone entries as well. So he'll definitely be a boost to the power play when they get him back. But, you know, all in all, guys, I mean, it's been a massive leap for this power play under Cale Maclean. He deserves a lot of credit. The guys deserve a lot of credit. And if I were to single two players out, it would be the guy who's down low and the guy who's up top. So you've got Andrei Kuzmenko, and we've heard Ryan Huska say it. We've heard others say it. He is one of the best players in the NHL playing that down low role below the goal line on the power play. He's got such great edges. He's got such great hands. He can shoot the puck. He can pass the puck. He's been so good down low. And then up top, you've got Mackenzie Weegar, who, as we saw when he scored 20 goals last season, he's off to a great start again this season. He, much like Mark Giordano in the past, just has a real knack for being able to get the puck through to the net from the point. you know, finding those lanes. It doesn't have to be a 100-mile-an-hour slap shot. Quite often, those are not overly tippable shots. But Mackenzie Weegar's, he's got a knack for being able to find those lanes and either put the puck in the net or put it in a spot where it can and go off a teammate's stick or maybe bounce off a body and in. So for me, Kuzmenko and Weegar have done a really good job playing, again, down low and up top on the Flames' power play. And that's led to a lot of success going back to the end of last season.
So now it's Pittsburgh on Tuesday night to kick off a three-game homestand for the Calgary Flames. As we start to wrap up the Daily Flames Roundtable, Wilsey, we will talk to you on game day on Tuesday. Thank you, pal. Stay warm.
Sounds good. Talk to you then.
Derek Wills is the voice of the Calgary Flames. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk, and that'll wrap us up on the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.